You are listening to a podcast from the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace.
Thank you, Dr. Yolkin. So let's let Dr. Daba respond to these remarks. I think they're both relating to the question of the particular nature of Russia and how is it possible to have a singular it's not a point, it's a country, and how can you have one particular grade for such a large territory?
Well, thank you very much, and of course what I would like is to also hear from the audience, so I'm going to be very quick in my comments on what both Oleg and Mikhail just shared with us. First and foremost, the index that we have produced is version 1.0. It's the first version of the index. I mentioned in the presentation the fact that there are other components that will be very important to be able to incorporate, and with time we will do it. The next version is going to allow us to do that. And we are about to start a partnership with one of the four largest consulting companies that is interested in bringing the index at the local level so that you do not only measure Russia, but you can measure Moscow, you can measure St. Petersburg, you can measure at a more local level, and then you can bring that information at a more even granular level and understand better the vulnerabilities and the levels of preparedness. So I agree completely with what Oleg was mentioning and the fact that it is very important to go from a general number to a more granular information related to each country. As a matter of fact, you know, Russia is the largest country of the world. And there are differences between the north, the south, the east, and the west. The same thing happens in the United States. While there is lack of water, for example, on the California side, there is excess water in Louisiana, for example. And the United States had difficulties handling some of the natural disasters during Katrina, for example. Brazil is also a country that is a country of contrasts. So the answer is yes, it needs to go to the other levels of details. What we are trying to do here is encourage others to also do more work and hopefully, with our effort, trigger a movement where more and more people want to be engaged and want to go to other levels. So in that case, I look forward to some sort of exploring some sort of work in a relationship with the State Hydrological Institute and with Oleg concretely to work a little bit more on that. One of Mikhail's Yolkin's comment had to do with climate change equals uncertainty, and we couldn't agree more. And some of the uncertainties are very difficult for humans to resolve in a short period of time. But on the readiness front, all of the measurements on the readiness front are in the hands of humans to resolve. There are no excuses for rule of law, for combating corruption, for lack of access to education, for political stability, for transparency, for less regulation and more competition. And therefore, for countries that are still in the red quadrant, or in the yellow quadrant, it will take time to reduce vulnerabilities, but it can be done relatively fast, the changes that can take place on the readiness front. And the sooner a country does changes, the more investment from the private sector is going to take place, which on one hand is going to create jobs, is going to help diversify the economy from, for example, an oil and gas-based into one that is also based on technology and why not, you know, in many other areas. So I also agree with what the comments made by Mikhail, a successful businessman here in Russia. And we hope that the kind of information that we are putting forward, because we are not arguing one way or another, we are just putting information out there, each sector of society will interpret it and use it as they see fit. We just hope to be a good medium, a good conveyor, a bridge to help in that process.
Thank you. Let's open it to the audience for questions now. We have about 20 minutes here. We would like to question for our panel?
My name is Ace Mont. I am from the Institute for Systems Analysis and New Economics School and Higher School of Economics. I have one comment and one technical question. First of all, I should say that this index should be considered as highly subjective because of the methodology. You cannot quantify values that are not easily quantifiable. So if you change a little bit this methodology of calculating this index, you can get different results. And the second is the question. You showed some diagrams and you showed the trend. That's, I think, is an approximation of those observations. Can you tell me what is its statistical estimation? So what is the corresponding supposing t statistics of this approximation or R squared? Thank you.
You're welcome. Do you want to take a couple of questions so we address the two or three at once?
Subjectivity of some of the data. Mm-hmm. Who else? The second question? Yes, sir. Could you wait for a microphone? Just identify who you are and where you work.
Yeah, thank you. My name is Floris. No, I had a very basic question, actually, because I do understand the use of the of this matrix, actually. Which is brilliant. So thank you for the presentation. Well, my question is that could you explain once more what really the adaption part is? That there is uncertainty in the future. That's what I understand. But what I do not understand is how it is parallel to the mitigation part.
Добрый вечер. У меня вопрос, наверное, характера такого изначального. То есть вы отслеживаете последствия изменений климатических параметров. То есть, соответственно, вы сами климатические параметры смотрите. То есть какую-то отслеживаете последовательность изменений климатических параметров. Скажите, вы учитываете воздействие антропогенное, которое в любой момент может изменить эти климатические параметры? То есть вы вот четко только по изменению природных параметров или все-таки вы учитываете еще антропогенное воздействие?
Take those three questions. I understand the first question was how do you quantify essentially subjective parameters like what governance or corruption? Second, what is the adaption side of this? What is the nature of the adaption? Is that your question that you're talking about? And third, in the index, how are you accounting for changes in climate itself, the fact that it is a dynamic system and there are anthropogenic changes going on that one country can control?
Yes, thank you. I will start with the last question in terms of monitoring trends related to climate change, because I think that's kind of the medullary or the core question that many out there are trying to address or resolve. And I tried to address it. Maybe I wasn't that clear. But we, the Global Adaptation Institute, is not interested in getting into the debate of whether climate change is created or not by humans. there is enough information out there for people to make their own judgment. And we respect the positions of people out there. What we are saying is that it doesn't matter what you believe on climate change and on the mitigation front more concretely. Today, you have needs in terms of food, water, agriculture, energy, and you have a lot of challenges related to coastal protection. We think people have been wasting their time in long debates. I used to be the number two at the World Bank, responsible for 110 countries, all of Africa, all of the Middle East, all of Asia, and all of Latin America. Every year, there is a meeting to discuss the same things, and the conclusions are always the same. Politicians cannot agree on a common set of definitions, a common set of goals in one way or another. So as a pragmatic person coming from the private sector, understanding government relatively well, I said, let that discussion continue and hopefully we'll reach a destination. I want to focus on what matters today. And it is not compassion unless it really works. And that's what adaptation is all about. In the United States, with the death of cap and trade, adaptation is the way to go. And therefore, we are not tracking any of, because we are not a climate change in the sense of mitigation organization. What we are tracking is population, urbanization, economic development, consumption of food, consumption of water, access to energy, access to knowledge, access to technology, access to infrastructure. That's what we are tracking. That's what we believe matters today, independently of whether you think the world is going to be 5 degrees higher or 5 degrees lower. It is very important, but you already have challenges today. And I put the example of Africa, for example, where less than 5% of the population, on average, excluding South Africa, have access to energy. We are 7 billion people and growing. So we need to be mindful about that. That's our focus. That attempts to address the question or the second question that was asked about the definition or the distinction between mitigation and adaptation, and why do we say, or why did I refer to adaptation as a parallel track? Today, population is growing, population are moving. In the next 20 years, about 80%, according to the latest numbers of the population, will live within 100 kilometers of coastal areas. When you see what is happening in Thailand, when you see what is happening in my own country, El Salvador, or actually all the way from Mexico to Colombia, that only last month 700,000 people lost their homes living very near to the ocean or very near to rivers because of the floodings that took place, you realize that you need to start adapting. You need to start preparing for that. And how do you prepare for that? Well, you need to have from early warning systems to good communications to better building codes, to better infrastructure to get people out of those places or to get inputs into those places to save their lives and their livelihoods. Just 1 year ago, I teach at Princeton, and the class I taught last year was about Haiti. And I'm a big fan of Chile in South America. And I compare the two countries with the same year with a few months of difference. Haiti had an earthquake of about 7 in the Richter scale. Chile had one that was almost 9 in the Richter scale. In Haiti, more than 1.5 million people die, according to the government figures, and in Chile, less than 5,000 people die, with an earthquake that was many times stronger. Why? Well, Chile has been preparing for this now for quite some time, by building better the houses, having people larger income so they can live in better conditions. And therefore, when you also enable the environment for job creation, when you have better rule of law, then you have better conditions for people to survive these very challenging times. So that's what adaptation is all about. It's closer, if you want, to sustainable development. Okay? And then to the first question that was made, in the website, so don't believe me, but on the website, you can see it's a triangle that is there of about 38 different sources of information that were taken into account for about 1 million pieces of information. And the correlations, in some cases, were very low. We didn't take that information. But the indexes that we have considered have a correlation of 0.75 or above. In some cases, the correlation is 1. And so we choose between one indicator or another whenever the correlation was 0.75 or above. And we disclose all of that information in the website. So you can see the sources of information, and then you can go to each of those sources. There are links to go to each of those sources, and then you can argue with them about their correlation or not, because we are not inventing numbers. We are taking data from the last 15 years, indicating the source, indicating the level of confidence. Like some of those sources openly say that they are 20% off track, 20% variation up or down. It doesn't matter. I'll tell you why. As a former minister of finance, when I had to privatize the telephone company, when I had to privatize the electric companies, I needed to have some valid information or indicator that I can use to go to my Congress and say, look, we are number 50 in the world. Is Costa Rica going to beat us? Let's pass this legislation so that we can privatize in competition all of these state-owned companies. Let's change this legislation to eliminate the corruption. I got rid of all the workers of customs because of the corruption that used to exist there. I didn't care if the index, in that case was the doing business report that IFC and the World Bank produced, or what the rating agencies use. I didn't care if it was 20% off. What I wanted was to have the right incentive to induce policymakers to change the legislation to be much more friendly for investments from the private sector, to increase the transparency and reduce the corruption. So the Global Adaptation Index is not a thermometer that tells you the temperature. It is a navigation chart that points at a site, at a direction, and you either go in the right direction, doesn't matter if it's 10 degrees or more or less, or you are going in the wrong direction. And that's why I put the four colors, the quadrant, so that you can have a good way of knowing in which direction to move. Again, I close with the first question. I choose that route because there are still, the last 3 days and tomorrow, here in Moscow, representatives of how many countries?
33.
33 countries. In the meeting that is going to take place in Durban, there are going to be 180 countries. You cannot agree. You cannot make 180 countries to agree on a temperature. But you can make them, you can let them agree on what direction to move. And that's our ambition. It's not to tell them the exact time, but to tell them that it is either night or day. And that's what the index attempts to do. But from the mathematical perspective, one of my scientists is the former chief scientist of the World Bank, Ian Noble, a professor from Australia. And I also have a scientist from NASA who's working for us. So we can explain to you the numbers and the relationships and all you want. But that's not what I want. What I want is to influence decision makers at the highest level to move in a positive direction, to change the negative trend that many countries are in, and to motivate those who are actually going in a positive trend, because there are also many countries in there, and I showed them there.
So could you give the other way, what you said is exploitation.
Well, no. Well, read the directions, and directly you will be directed into the right direction.
I guess that was a comment, not a question. One more question? Sure. And you can address a question to any member of the panel,
Спасибо.
Of course.
МГУ инженерной экологии Тюхов Игорь Иванович, кафедра ЮНЕСКО, техника экологически чистых производств. Мы как бы давно решили, что мы должны заниматься возобновляемой энергетикой, потому что это один из путей решения проблемы с климатом. Вот то, что я услышал, мне показалось интересным, хотя, смотря что закладывается в модели, можно получать разные результаты. И в этом смысле мне интересно, вот Дания, почему там на первом месте была. Там же проблемы с побережьем, Голландии, например, там я где-то не увидел. Но вопрос у меня такой. Вы сами сказали, что мы должны как-то оказывать влияние на нашу власть, на которую, наверное, трудно оказать власть, потому что у них вместо нервных волокон трубы. Вот. А вот вопрос такой, почему нет молодежи, и как привлечь молодежь, и почему мы не вовлекаем вот в эти обсуждения молодежь, вот мне это кажется было бы интересным. Я бы вот на месте нашего ректора с удовольствием пригласил вас в наш университет, и, может быть, провести вот такое совещание, семинар, это было бы полезно, потому что это проблемы молодежи. Вот мой вопрос касается, как вовлечь молодежь вот в наше обсуждение. Спасибо.
Let's take one more question too. That's, yes, sir. Thank you, Doug.
Sure. Я простите, что так вклиниваюсь. Дело в том, что вам всем до дома гораздо ближе ехать. Мне нужно вечером в Петербург домой попасть, поэтому я должен строго в 6 часов уйти, иначе придется задержаться вас еще в Москве. Я надеюсь, что вы действительно очень интересно этот семинар продолжите и не будете торопиться, как я.
Завидую. А какую информацию у вас можно будет где-то через организаторов? Да?
Наверное, да. Вы знаете, я всем не могу так. Можете посмотреть там 3W Hydrology.ru, там наш институт.
He's not off the hook.
Yes, we will have everybody's contact information. Quickly here, because it's almost 6 o'clock.
Yes, thank you. I'm Ralph Alderman from the German Embassy here in Moscow. You said you want to influence decision makers to take the right decisions. What would be your top 3 recommendations to the Russian government to adapt to climate change in the Russian Arctic, in the permafrost zone, for example?
You can feel free to address that as well.
Yeah, I guess it was for me. Yeah, of course. Да, я понимаю, что вопрос на самом деле на злобу дня, и он, конечно, связан не столько с обсуждаемой сегодня темой адаптации, сколько с тем, что через пару недель в Дурбане открывается COP17, и там речь пойдет скорее про снижение климатических изменений, да, про mitigation, то, что называется, да, смягчение. Ну, я понимал, что не удастся избежать, как бы, да, объединения двух этих сюжетов в один, хотя завтра это будет обсуждаться здесь, а не сегодня. Но все равно. Значит, во-первых, вы как в воду глядели, я вроде вам и не посылал свой комментарий сегодняшний, но массе народу, с которым я общаюсь по электронной почте, я отправил свой комментарий по поводу вчерашнего заявления нашего главного переговорщика о том, что Россия, да, готова предоставлять информацию о выбросах, да, готова, так сказать, вести всю техническую работу, участвовать в органах Киотского протокола, но не готова брать на себя обязательства. Ну, вот я вам могу просто почти дословно пересказать свой комментарий по этому поводу, но я, честно, не понимаю такого поведение, да, вот совсем не понимаю. То есть я уже неоднократно слышал эти заявления на разных мероприятиях, но вчера было, видимо, мероприятие очень высокого уровня, и фактически это есть официальная позиция России, российской делегации, но глубинный смысл сказанного вот все время от меня ускользает. Значит, участие в Киотском протоколе, в смысле технического участия, отчеты, участие в органах, кадастр, реестр, бог знает что еще, это же деньги. И получается, что мы как бы соглашаемся нести затраты, связанные с нашим участием в Киотском протоколе, но категорически отказываемся от тех преимуществ и выгод, которые могли бы получить. Ну, я поясню свою позицию очень просто. Вот есть целый ряд стран, которые не хотят брать на себя обязательства по второму периоду. Ну, например, там США, Канада, да, Япония. В принципе, я могу понять эту позицию. Ну, почему? Канада в свое время Америка и Канада в свое время заявили очень решительные, такие очень амбициозные планы по снижению выбросов. Ну, понятно, что они не в состоянии были физически это сделать. Особенно тогда, когда не удалось протащить идею о том, что там засчитывается сокращение в лесах в тех объемах, о которых они мечтали. Но не получается. Япония изо всех сил старалась и продолжает стараться. У нее тоже очень амбициозный план. И вообще в Киото было принято решение, поэтому им отступать некуда. Но им это дорого. Вот реально. А тут еще землетрясение, тут еще цунами и прочие другие неприятности. Да? А они вынуждены тратить и на это, и еще покупая у того же Китая, у других стран Тихоокеанского региона большое количество сокращений. Дорого. И, в общем, они сбунтовались, типа. Там, мы, типа, готовы, но если и вы тоже. Понимаю эту позицию. А вот чего мы сбунтовались, не понимаю. Нам, по большому счету, эти сокращения ничего не стоило. Но само получилось. У нас с вами колоссальный запас прочности. Примерно 6 миллиардов тонн СО2 мы не использовали из нашей квоты. Киотский протокол, в принципе, это разрешает переносить на будущее. 6 миллиардов, это же огромная величина на самом деле. Ничего нам не угрожает. Почему мы не хотим этого делать, я вот категорически не понимаю. Мы только-только начали осваивать статью 6 Киотского протокола. Первые 32 проекта утверждены. Да, там на очереди еще 70, 80, 100. Но если мы не участвуем в Киото, то по большому счету следующий год последний, когда можно что-то в этом направлении сделать. А если участвуем, то у всех этих там сотни проектов, возможно, еще у одной сотни будет какая-то перспектива, которой сегодня нет. Поэтому вот я бы рекомендовал, во-первых, не делать резких заявлений, а все-таки взвешивать, что выгодно нам, и не обязательно играть в ту игру, которую играют американцы и японцы и так далее. Это первое. Но это глобальное пожелание. Пожелание размером поменьше – это все-таки начать обсуждать в рамках COP17 перспективы статьи 6. Okay. 2 года как минимум у нас еще может быть, и надо этим воспользоваться. Третье я не успел, извините.
Thank you. I think he's the question. The answer is politics is difficult. Let's have Dr. Dabu and the young people question. And
yes.
Thank you.
I will answer from here because I think the question of the young people is a nice place to finish. So before I answer that, just quickly, using the index to the representative of the German embassy here, if you look at the vulnerability. The index, because I don't know by memory the 161 countries we have here, so they did this for me, for the 161 countries. The red dot shows the worst scores, or if you want, the greatest challenges. So in the case of Russia, it's in food capacity, in temperature change of water, for water, and in terms of disability as adjusted to the number of lives, to the years of lives a person has. And on the readiness front, the challenges, which is where the worst scores are, will be on investment freedom, on control of corruption. Those will be the 2 big ones. So those will be the areas, and if you want to know more about it, I invite you to see the index. Actually, in the case of corruption, we take the worldwide governance indicators. It tells you which countries Russia compares to Tajikistan, Kenya, Haiti, Burundi, and Guinea-Bissau. And in terms of investment freedom, according to the Index of Economic Freedom, which is produced by Heritage Foundation and the Wall Street Journal, but it's the same for the doing business and many of the other indicators, Russia compares to the Bahamas, Togo, Laos, Kiribati, and Ecuador. So those will be the 6 areas, the 5 areas, 3 on the vulnerability front and 2 on the readiness front. As per the last point, last week we had the university that is called Tecnológico de Monterrey, one of the best universities of Mexico. We launched the index for all of Latin America using their platform. We were connected to 33 campuses, university campuses in Mexico, and 12 campuses throughout Latin America, Colombia, Ecuador, Perú, Costa Rica, El Salvador, Uruguay, Paraguay, Brazil, 12 countries. In each of those countries and territory campuses, we invited representatives of the private sector from each of those countries. We invited representatives of government. So we have people from the ministries of the environment, from the Ministry of Economic Affairs, etc. And we had a lot of students and a lot of teachers, a lot of students. I believe the data they gave me is that on that meeting, which was very similar to this in terms of what I just presented, except that we presented for each of the countries, there were 1,000 young people approximately that joined that meeting, that conference. And the best questions and the most interesting challenges came from those students who were just first curious about some of these themes. Second, they were encouraging those sitting around them from, because they heard people from other countries asking questions, encouraging someone from government or from the private sector. Why are we in Ecuador, in Guayaquil or in Quito, not doing this? Why don't we do more of this? Or in some cases, some people from government were saying, well, look, we came down in the index on water, for example, in 2005, as per what the rankings show, because we passed a new legislation, but we couldn't implement the focalization of subsidies, for example. Or the water company has increased the leakage of water, so less people have access to water. So that kind of dialogue involving young people is not only very encouraging on the outreach and the education front, but I think is the kind of grassroots support that people on the public sector need to hear so that more changes, more positive changes can take place. So I finalize with this. I will welcome a relationship. I will welcome participating in an event with your university. We can use technology to do it, so it doesn't have to be, I don't have to be physically there, but I can certainly send one of our people from the institute, or we can join like these many universities that were working, that were joining with us last week from Mexico. We can do something in Euroasia, and we can work with your school and with Oleg's school, and maybe organize something and put ourselves a goal of having at least 1,000 young people listening to this, asking questions, hopefully finding this tool interesting, but more importantly, challenging those who are putting the public policy in place, those from the private sector and those from the more academic world, also to the kind of things that are important.
Thank you, Doctor. So we start and we end with the young people who will be inhabiting this world. I think that's very important. Anna, do we have a reception? Yes. So I want to thank the audience for these excellent questions. I want to thank the panelists for their excellent presentations. They'll be available, and we have a reception right next door. Thank you for coming.